Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. And colleagues, I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 695. As you can see, we have a full room. And I'd just like to welcome our legislative colleagues. I'm going to just make a few comments and then hand it off to my co-sponsors. Committee members, in front of you, you see a bill, and you'll see my name on it. I worked on this last session in February, and we are back with an improved version. And so I've asked my co-sponsors to come up and talk a little bit about the bill. We also have Renee from Oregon Environmental Council that will actually walk us through the amendments. But first, I'm going to have our trusted committee staff provide a description, and you'll also mention about the dash fives.
Yes.
Well, right?
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 695 would prohibit the manufacturing, distributing, and selling of child beverage containers, reusable bottles, or any container containing infant formula made or lined with bisphenol A. There are a number of provisions in the bill that are outlined in the SMS, but there is a dash five amendment, which should be in your packet, that Renee is going to go through. There's also a hand engrossed version of the dash five, so you can follow along. So I don't think I'll go into the rest of the bill since there are a number of changes.
And I think because Senator Bates is here, and I know that he has to leave, why don't we have Senator Bates come up, and then we'll pull you up afterwards, Renee. And Senator, you want to come join your esteemed colleagues up here? Thank you. Okay. Thank you. And Senator Boquist, do you want to kick it off, or whoever?
Senator Rosenbaum.
Okay.
And then we'll let. I've got time. You want to go second, so you can.
You're keeping me from a meeting that I just assume stay here with.
Okay.
All right.
Sure.
Not, that means you can't leave.
Yeah.
You have to ask permission for the chair before you can leave.
Right. We'll hold you here hostage. Uh-huh. Senator Rosenbaum, kick us off. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am State Senator Diane Rosenbaum from District 21, which is southeast and northeast Portland and Milwaukee. And I'm also appearing today in my capacity as Senate co-chair of the Women's Health and Wellness Alliance. And we are here in support of Senate Bill 695, which is a centerpiece of the Women's Health and Wellness Alliance agenda for this session. I want to thank you for holding a hearing today on this very important bill. Senate Bill 695 will prohibit the use of harmful estrogen replicators, bisphenol A or BPA, in sippy cups, baby bottles, and plastic water bottles, and this will help protect our children from the harmful effects of BPA. We will then be joining states that have acknowledged that this is something we can do in a very significant step to protect the health of our young people, but also of future generations. BPA is believed to be what's called an obesogen, which means it promotes fat cell development. And this fat cell development has been linked to the promotion of early onset puberty for girls in the United States by 1 or 2 years. That problem is that the premature maturation of girls has implications for breast cancer and will ultimately, we believe, increase the incidence of breast cancer down the road. Oregon, as you probably know, has one of the highest rates of breast cancer in the nation. And while the rates for older women are decreasing, we are finding that breast cancer diagnoses for younger women are continuing to increase. That's a huge problem because an earlier diagnosis of breast cancer is very often more lethal and less treatable than one at an older age. It's very troubling, and scientists have evidence to believe that toxic chemicals and BPA in particular interfere with the body's normal hormone functions. As you will no doubt hear later from expert testimony from Oregon health professionals, the dosage of BPA, the timing of BPA's exposure, whether it's in childhood or for the fetus, can set off a chain of events that have detrimental lifelong consequences. This bill, Senate Bill 695, takes a modest yet meaningful approach by removing exposures to BPA for Oregon's most vulnerable citizens and ensuring that their hormone systems will function the way they should. As co-chair of the Women's Health and Wellness Alliance, I am very pleased to urge your support for the amendments and for this very important bill. I believe it will ensure that our children have the opportunity to grow up healthy and without the negative influence of BPA in their bodies. So thank you for scheduling this hearing today. I am very much looking forward to seeing the bill move forward and being able to hear the testimony as it moves forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Dr. Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Senator Alan Bates from Southern Oregon, District 3, Medford, Ashland, Phoenix, and Talent, and Jacksonville. Thank you for taking this bill up today. I'm going to speak primarily not as a state senator today, but as a family practice physician. I've been a physician for over 30 years, delivered over 3,000 babies, and have treated women for breast cancer and had to watch the consequence of breast cancer over and over again in my practice. I'll just give you a few points, and I think you'll hear more from people I think are a lot more expert in this field than I am. Number one, about 9 or 10 years ago, we started getting reports about this product bifenyl A, which most of us had never heard of before. We researched it, of course, and found that it came out in the 1930s, and it was actually brought out first as an estrogen to be given to women, potentially. At that time, it was found that it couldn't be used for that. Ended up being used in the plastics industry. Exposing women to this when they're pregnant and then their fetuses to this is something we are very concerned about, as well as exposure to the children in the first 5 to 6 years of life. The children that are growing when they're exposed to an estrogen have a lot of side effects we just don't know how to completely evaluate. We're seeing lower sperm counts. We're seeing young women mature earlier than expected. We're seeing changes that we really can't explain any other way. We believe these are linked to bifenyl A's and similar compounds in our environment. Eliminating this one is a good step forward for doing that. We also have seen something rather important in the last 6 or 7 years in medicine, which is a dramatic decrease in women developing breast cancer after the age of 50. We believe that decrease is the result of a dramatic change in the prescription and writing of prescriptions for estrogens postmenopausally. It's made a huge difference. We're seeing a significant and dramatic decline as fewer and fewer women are taking these estrogens after going through menopause and continuing it. We believe that estrogen is a primary driver in the production of breast cancer in those women who are susceptible to it. That said, the thing that really drives us home to me is 2 points. This is the last 2 points I'll make, and I will have to go to my other meeting. Okay.
I can write you a note.
Yeah. The first point is that we have alternatives. There's absolutely no reason to have this used in baby products or expose pregnant women to it when we have other products we can use that we know are safer. There's absolutely no reason to keep this on the market. The second point is, and I love this organization more than you might think, Walmart has already eliminated this from their stores. Why can't the state of Oregon do this? Walmart is more sensitive to the needs of their customers than we are to the needs of our citizens in this state. They obviously have, in this particular item in my mind, are more concerned about the health and well-being of their customers than we are taking care of of Oregonians in the state. So I would ask that you move this bill quickly forward. If the time isn't now, when will it be? I think we fell last time by one vote, if I remember right. I'd like to see a strong vote in the Senate when this hits the floor and moving on to the House. And thank you again to all of you for bringing this forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Don.
Madam Chair Dingfelder, Senator Brzozinski, Senator Olson, Senator Haas, Senator Thompson, for the three long-timers, I apologize. We went through tens of hours of this in the last session, so I'm going to kind of repeat some of the items that we covered back then.
And you are?
Senator Boquist.
Thank
Brian
you.
Boquist. Apologies.
Just checking.
Sometimes I wonder today, Madam Chair. Every 15 minutes, a different person rotating through the office. Let me give a little brief history of where we are, so it kind of brings everybody up to speed. In the last session, we had this issue before the committee. We looked at the science. We looked at the European precautionary principle. We looked at what other countries were doing. And then we kind of went down through the scientific evidence. A lot was made in the last session of what's the FDA's position and where are they on this particular issue. I should say that myself, and I'll speak for him, Senator Atkinson, who's not here, actually voted no on this in committee and issued notice of a minority report and stuck to the minority report, which was based on the FDA position. It's not a case where Senator Atkinson and I were in a position where we opposed what we were doing. It's the precautionary principle of how do you proceed. Now, during that time, of course, one of the things you learn as a legislature is you sit down and talk with everybody and try and come to a consensus and a more practical approach of how do we proceed and what do we do. Now, Madam Chair, committee members, you're going to hear a lot of testimony, and you've seen a lot of testimony and email about the FDA's position. What is ironic in all legislative hearings is that the basis of facts generally come from the same place. So therefore, you can hear from one side that the FDA said XYZ, and you can hear from the other side that the FDA said ABC. And interestingly enough, the FDA's position comes from a January 2010 report, of which has been distributed to you. So when you start searching through your documents of what is the position of the FDA, you can simply skim to the report, and you'll see that the report supports, in some cases, both sides as they go across the board. I think it's important to note in the FDA report, and I'm going to cover just a few highlights because you have it to read, and obviously since we're on our -5 or -6, going towards the dash whatever, we're still tweaking and working our way through the various amendments. I would point out that in the overview of the FDA report, and I'll quote, on the basis of results from recent studies using novel approaches to test for sublingual effects, both the National Toxicology Program at the National Institute of Health and FDA have some concerns about potential effects of BPA on the brain, behavior, prostate gland, fetus, infants, and young children. In the interim, the FDA is taking reasonable steps to replace human exposure to BPA in the food supplies. They include supporting industry's actions to stop producing BPA-containing baby bottles and infant feeding cups in the market, facilitating the development of alternatives, and it goes on from there. When we sat down in the interim with industry, with producers, with canners, with everybody at all the sites, and started walking through all of the options that we had to ourselves in coming forth with a bill, we came up with a concept that contained basically the minority report from last time, and that is that taking immediate action on baby cups, sippy bottles, and potentially infant formulas. And the second thing that actually I came up with is start saying, okay, as Dr. Bates has pointed out, we have Walmart and virtually every other major retailer who is taking action. We have companies like Advent Playtex, which produces this baby bottle right here, which you'll notice says BPA-free on it. And we have a whole host of all the major manufacturers taking action. Unfortunately, though, not all of them are taking action. You will hear the issue of, well, let the market and market demand control the outcome. Well, when all of the responsible retailers and manufacturers are starting to move towards banning the product, that creates a market opportunity. So now we have imported products coming in to fill that vacuum, and it's a vacuum that we're trying to reward on the opposite side by identifying the manufacturers that are out there, identifying the retailers that are out there, and saying, you're doing the right thing. In that light, we started looking at the labeling provision. The labeling provision that you'll see in the amendments that are coming forward are a voluntary labeling provision, and they are not a prescriptive labeling provision. The goal in that is to reward businesses. Let me give you an example of the legislative process and history. What has happened in the past is we've identified and said organic type products are good for the Oregon economy. And we in the legislature have put in place, through the Department of Agriculture and elsewhere, mechanisms for a third party to certify an organic product. Once the product is certified organic, the producer of that product in the state of Oregon can sometimes achieve a 25% market advantage, creating Oregon jobs. We approached that same thing and went out and talked to the Oregon industries, not the people in Washington, D.C., not the Chinese companies that are members of associations, not the Europeans that are members of associations. We went out and talked to Oregon companies and said, if we could provide a third-party mechanism when the technology comes to fruition that would give you a market advantage in the state of Oregon for Oregon products, would you be interested in such a labeling provision regarding BPA-free? Keep in mind,
there's BPA everywhere. And so what we're talking about is BPA inside the container itself. You will find industry that comes in from the state of Oregon that says, well, we're opposed to this bill. You won't find very many industries that will say, we're going to turn down a 40% market advantage. Not one single industry is going to say that. And so what we've done is started working towards common ground here. We're almost there. The present legislative draft is almost there. And trust me, we've been around and around and around trying to come up with it. But what we're trying to do is identify those products that we know we need to take off the market while rewarding the businesses and rewarding the market for doing the right thing, penalizing those who are endangering our infant and our children, and at the same time turning around and putting an incentive out there in front of us that says Oregon and the Northwest will benefit as soon as we have the technology and the science in the next 2 or 3 years latest. Let me say that again, 2 or 3 years latest. I can tell you right now that there are replacements out in the test market right now. That's fact. So if we can put an incentive, instead of government for once penalizing, we put an incentive out there and reward those companies who have already done the right thing, and we put an incentive out there that will help reward companies to go forward, that will give us a market advantage in the state of Oregon and at the same time protect our children and our infants. That's the direction we're going. Part of it is the precautionary principle. I would encourage you to listen as they walk through the amendments. I would take both sides seriously because, as I said, they're all going to quote the same FDA report. And then in the end of the day, we need to come to a conclusion of whether we're going to help be part of the solution, and that solution is protecting infant and children, and that solution is promoting Oregon and not the rest of the world. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I know that Senator Bates has to go. Any quick questions for this panel? All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming here. Okay. Renee, why don't you come back up and we'll have, I'm going to ask you to walk through the amendment. And I also want to say, Senator Boquist, thank you for your leadership on this bill and working hard. I know we're almost there with the amendments. I'm going to have Mae Thompson and Catherine Thomas, is that right? Thomason, come up as well. And we have two sheets of people that have signed up. I'm going to ask people if you can please keep your comments to about three minutes. We have a timer up here. I hope I'm not going to have to use it. But the chair needs to leave no later than 5. So we have about an hour and a half, and I'm looking. I think we can do it. If you have written testimony, please can I ask if you can summarize. Please do not read your testimony because we can read it. We just like the highlights. So with that, Renee, I know you're going to quickly walk us through the amendments.
I am. Chair Dingfelder, distinguished members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Renee Hackenmiller-Paradis. I am the Environmental Health Program Director at Oregon Environmental Council. We know that BPA baby bottles, sippy cups, and infant formula cans can leach BPA into food and drinks, and the youngest Oregonians have BPA in their bodies, and hundreds of studies provide evidence that there are health impacts associated with these exposures. My co-panelists will highlight the health impacts of BPA, and much more information can be found in all of our written testimonies. I want to take the time to clarify what this bill does and what I believe to be the intent of the bill co-sponsors with the amendments. SB 695 is narrowly focused on eliminating BPA from a very small number of products that children use to eat and drink. Through amendments that were recently drafted, the bill will be narrowed even more. And I think you guys have a copy of the -5 amendments, and I've also provided this explanation in writing, too. So if the proposed -5 amendments were gutted and stuffed into the underlying bill, which I believe is the intent of the bill co-sponsors, the revised draft would have the following elements. It would eliminate the sale of bisphenol A-containing baby bottles, sippy cups, and reusable bottles effective January 1st, 2012. This would put us in line with what Washington passed last year. It would require the Women, Infants, and Children program to only approve infant formula that has no more than 0.1 parts per billion detectable BPA in the formula contained within the cans, and this would be effective January 1st, 2013. This with this -5, it would no longer impact the retail sale of infant formula. It would only be RCWIC-approved infant formula. The Dash 5 amendments would also require WIC to report on the availability of infant formula, meeting the 0.1 part per billion standard 1 year prior to the effective date. And the final major change on the Dash 5 amendments would remove the labeling requirement in the original bill and instead establish a BPA-free Oregon advisory group to determine opportunities for Oregon companies to create a market standard for BPA products and do all of the things which Senator Boquist talked about in creating a market advantage for Oregon companies. Is there any questions about the Dash 5 that I can address?
Well, why don't we have the rest of the panelists go first, and then we'll see if there's questions,
okay,
if we can stay up here. So thank you for coming.
Thank you for the time. Senators, thank you for this opportunity to share with you Physicians for Social Responsibility's views. My name is Dr. Mae Thompson. I'm the Environmental Health Program Director for Oregon PSR, and I am a public health nurse by vocation. I represent almost 2,000 Oregon healthcare professionals who care about the gravest threats to human health and are supporters of PSR. As you've heard, bisphenol A is a hormone-disrupting toxicant found in plastic products and the lining of canned food. It leaches out of the plastic or the can lining into food and liquids that we put into our bodies. Recent findings show bisphenol A present in the blood of 95% of adults, in the cord blood of newborns, meaning that it crosses the placenta, and in the environment as a whole. We know we ingest bisphenol A in food and water, but recent evidence suggests that we're also getting it by absorption through the skin and to a smaller extent, perhaps in inhalation of dust. It does cross the placenta, as I mentioned, and it is found in breast milk. It is metabolized by the kidneys. Low-level BPA exposure during early stages of development is linked to increased susceptibility to cancer, hormone changes affecting fertility, rates of miscarriage and endometriosis, insulin resistance, and someone mentioned obesogen, fat cells, diabetes, and heart disease, and developmental problems. Studies on bisphenol A in animals implicates it in the fertility and survival of fetuses and neonates, and last but not least, as a thyroid disruptor, it may be a potential neurotoxicant relating effects of thyroid on normal brain development in babies, including the way nerves go together and connect, and the behavioral consequences thereof. I think we've heard a lot about children being different from adults. They eat, drink, and breathe more per pound of body weight than adults do. Their GI tract has and skin have more than two times the surface area compared to their body weight of adults. They have lower levels in the early years of levels of metabolic enzymes, so toxicants stay around in their bodies later. They play outside more. They're closer to the ground, and we all know they put their fingers in their mouths a lot. A greater proportion of most toxicants enters children's bodies and stays there longer, allowing it more time to exert damaging effects. And in fact, studies have shown that children have the highest levels of BPA in their bodies, followed by teens and adults. And even small amounts of endocrine-disrupting chemicals, such as bisphenol A, my partner here, Catherine, will go more into endocrine disruptors. We can save money doing this. These kind of preventable diseases cost Oregon literally billions of dollars every year, and typically decision makers consider only the upfront costs about implementing these kind of environmental health protections rather than the costs all the way down the environmental health pipeline. I think I'll leave my pitch about why it's a great thing to the rest of the people testifying, and we'll be glad to pass the microphone to Catherine.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Catherine Thomason. I'm a physician here in Oregon, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Oregon Medical Association. I would also like to say that there's been a call for control on these types of substances, such as endocrine disruptors in general, and specifically bisphenol A, from many other societies, such as the Endocrine Society, the American Society of Human Genetics, Society for Reproductive Medicine, Pediatric Urology, and a number of others, representing over 40,000 professionals. I think everyone has spoken to what bisphenol A is. But I'd like to just briefly talk about how it's an endocrine disruptor. So it has endocrine effects, and our endocrine system works kind of like the driver in a car. So the driver knows where it wants to go. The car doesn't know where it wants to go. When the rain comes down, you want the windshield wipers on, but it takes a certain movement to make the windshield wipers go on. If you push it this way, or you bash it, or you do something else to it, the windshield wipers won't come on. Or if you don't know where you're going, you get lost. So endocrine chemicals that work like a hormone or disrupt the receptors or are applied at very, very tiny doses at the wrong time in the development of a fetus result in many, many problems. We know this is an estrogen, as Dr. Bates said earlier. We know now that estrogen receptors are not only in reproductive tissue, like the vagina and the uterus and the ovaries and the breast and the skin. They're also in the pancreas, in our insulin-creating cells. They are also in the brain, making sure that our behaviors are normal. So there are many, many locations for these estrogen receptors that these low-level toxics can have a great effect on. So to give some specific examples, in the testimony there is a compilation of studies that are done on one part per million or less. And of the 391 studies, 82% show negative effects or harm from these low doses of bisphenol A. And in particular, things that aren't typically thought about, but both neurologic and behavioral effects are significant when these exposures occur in utero or potentially in early infancy. So 97% of behavioral studies show change, whether it's feminization of masculine behavior, masculinization of female behavior. Other consistent effects were changes actually in the brain structure, the number of nerves, the support nerves, how the nerves went together, resulting in potential problems for mood, which is shown in animal studies, and memory problems as well. So these effects are more than just hormonal on reproductive tissue, but also because they're hormonal, and at various times in the life cycle of us, tiny amounts of this can have a great and grave impact on our function, our mood, our behavior, as well as on our tissue, our potential for cancer in our prostate, breast tissue, and those other types of tissues, which are shown well in animal studies nowadays. So I'd just like to leave time then for questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel of doctors, actually? We have three doctors up here.
Of course, you know, I'm going to have a question.
Yes.
Anyone can answer. Right behind you, there's a lady, and she just has one of those little binky things that they put in babies' mouths to nibble on. Would that be a source of BPA?
Senator Olson, Chair Dingfelder, in some circumstances they can be. Part she's chewing on is not bisphenol A. It used to be the outside part would be made with bisphenol A, but those are now often labeled BPA-free. But there are some legislative bodies that have taken action on the pacifiers themselves, too.
She also has some little toys back there, little plastic toys. Are they a source of BPA?
They are not.
They are not. Although BPA is used to make plastic.
Well, Senator Olson, Chair Dingfelder, I would actually have to look at them more closely. I'm going to say that they are not, but
okay.
Because I have talked to this mother, and I know she chooses BPA-free products, so that's why I'm saying that. It can be a potential concern. This bill is very narrowly focused on the on food and drink that children eat. That's not to mean that there aren't other sources of bisphenol A also.
The point I'm getting to is that toys, plastic toys, whether they're not, you know, milk bottles or whatever, they could be a potential source of this. So are we too narrow?
I was going to say, Senator Alston, if you want to amend the bill.
We have a dash. We have a dash six or dash six, seven. Dash yeah. Seven.
We've got some more dashes available. I'm sure that if you would. But this bill is narrowly crafted, and part of that is because we, as you've heard, want to focus on the highest exposure at the time at this time. So, any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next up, we have Commissioner Dan Salzman, who I know has to go to another hearing, so I'm going to ask him to come up, my city commissioner. And then I'm also going to ask Catherine Bradley and Melissa Sanchez, who's with the Oregon Nurses Association. Thank you, Commissioner, for being here today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Why don't you go ahead and get started and we'll
okay.
find whoever
Well, good
else
afternoon, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. It's good to see you all. I'm Dan Salzman, a member of the Portland City Council, and I'd like to voice the city's support and, indeed, Multnomah County's support for Senate Bill 695. We have a letter that we will distribute to the committee that's signed by myself and Chair Jeff Cogan from Multnomah County in support of this legislation. I guess I want to modify my support by saying we support the Dash 5 amendments that were just explained. I think those are reasonable and appropriate amendments. But we do think this is a very fundamental public health issue that affects the health of our infants and children, and therefore we think BPA should particularly be banned from children and infant products. So I don't want to, you've heard the science, and I'm not going to try to replicate that. But I do want to say that as somebody, I'm the commissioner in charge of the Portland Children's Levy, a voter-approved levy that invests about $12 million a year in early childhood programs, after-school mentoring programs, and child abuse prevention programs. So I have a lot of opportunity to go out and see Head Start programs. Just last week I visited one of our family relief nurseries, which works with families that are at high risk of abuse and neglect. And it's some great photo ops. I've had a lot of opportunities to try to sit at a 6-inch high table and have lunch with 2- and 3-year-olds. So if you go to my website...
Like being in the legislature.
Yeah,
okay.
If you go to my website, my Facebook page, you'll see a lot of great photo ops. But I guess the point I want to drive home is just last week at the Family Relief Nursery, seeing young kids sitting around with the sippy cups and the bottles, and realizing that, well, I'm probably quite convinced that the Family Relief Nurseries and the Head Start Centers and Early Head Start Centers probably find BPA-free products. You know, I'm not so convinced that the families have the same luxury. It's hard... it's hard raising kids, particularly if you're a single parent. It's hard to be make informed choices or to find those choices available in the marketplace if you choose to be BPA free. And so I think this is a real case where the state should step up and, in the name of protecting children and infants' health, pass a state ban. I think it's a fair thing, and I think too many parents are overwhelmed by either the lack of choices or just all the other things going on in their life that they just can't afford to try to deal with this one. As important as they may hear and think it is, it's just this is to be truly a legitimate role for state legislation. So I just want to add my support. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Salzman. I appreciate you being here today as well.
My pleasure.
So we have Gail Shibley, who is signed up, but we'll have you go next. And then I think I'm going to ask the moms if they want to come up because well, that's why.
And the kids.
And the kids.
For the record, that was not me. Yeah. Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee, I'm Gail Shibley. I'm the administrator for the Office of Environmental Public Health and the Public Health Division of the Oregon Health Authority. I am testifying in support of Senate Bill 695 because it, we believe, will protect the public health of some of Oregon's most sensitive people, our children. Members of the committee surely have heard me talk about the fact that we are playing somewhat of a real-life lab experiment in terms of the soup of the 83,000 chemicals now in commercial production in the United States, and the chemical soup in which we live and grow and give birth and raise our children. And from an environmental
environmental public health standpoint, we look at toxicity, we look at plausible completed exposure pathways to try to determine risk and public health risk. A couple things about toxicity. Bisphenol A, as you've heard, is an endocrine-disrupting chemical. Human data are very limited. Frankly, we don't tend to do controlled laboratory experiments on people anymore, and that's a good thing. But animal studies have demonstrated alterations in behavior, prostate weight, mammary tissue, timing of puberty onset in the offspring of rodents treated with bisphenol A during pregnancy. More recent studies have also implicated in utero exposure to bisphenol A helps create or catalyze epigenetic effects in which the expression of the gene changes even though the physical molecular structure of the gene does not change. So is it toxic? Yes. Are there plausible completed exposure pathways? Yes. And indeed, children under 6 years of age are estimated to get the highest doses of bisphenol A. Let me mention as well that from a public health standpoint, of all the environmental exposure pathways, food and drink are far and away the biggest exposure pathways for most environmental contaminants. Now, clearly, that's not true for possibly some gases or other things that you respire, tobacco smoke or other dermal exposures. But food and drink, far and away, are the biggest exposure pathways of concern. Children are not little adults. Pound for pound, they breathe more air, they drink more food, they drink and eat more liquid and solid food, and so they are particularly susceptible. They are also particularly susceptible just because they're children. They do hand to mouth often and all over the place, and consequently they are continually ingesting things in minute quantities that those of the rest of us may not do anymore.
I was going to say we're observing it firsthand, right?
I'm glad I could have my Vanna White moment. In addition, children are also vulnerable. They are both susceptible and vulnerable. They are vulnerable because there are key moments of human development, both in utero as well as young children. What we have learned is that the dose does not always make the poison. It is dose and timing. That can be particularly key in realizing irreversible, lifelong, but entirely preventable negative health outcomes. And that's why we're particularly pleased to see Senate Bill 695, as amended with the Dash 5s, would address these major sources of bisphenol A exposure, the epoxy linings of canned foods, including infant formula. While canned powdered formula is not as likely to contribute harmful levels of bisphenol A, liquid canned formula poses a potential risk, as do other canned foods. Liquid facilitates leaching. And indeed, a Canadian study found no detectable BPA in any powder formula, though they did find in liquid canned formulas. For full disclosure, you will see there have been a lot of scientific studies done on bisphenol A, and I didn't pretend to try to inundate you as I have done in previous sessions on various scientific issues. Some of those animal studies do not show the effects that I just mentioned. There are technical, scientific, laboratory, methodological reasons for that. Happy to take your questions and make sure our certified smart toxicologists give you the specific answers if you want, but suffice it to say we have looked at all of them, and we believe that those studies that don't find or have not found these kinds of effects have some very specific constraints that may predispose them to miss some very subtle changes that are caused by low but environmentally relevant doses. I specifically want to mention women, infants, and children, which is a sister office within the Public Health Division. They provide vouchers for infant formula to mothers who do not breastfeed. Women, infants, and children, or WIC, worked with the Oregon Environmental Environmental Council as they were drafting these amendments. The Dash 5, we believe, both safeguards children and does not diminish the program's ability to continue to serve all of those requesting services. We do not foresee any fiscal as a result of the changes in the Dash 5s. We also understand there to be no detectable levels of bisphenol A in WIC infant formula. The National Toxicology Program has designated bisphenol A and did several years ago now. They concluded that it was a chemical of, quote, some concern. And we have reviewed all of the peer-reviewed literature on bisphenol A, concluded that reducing exposure, especially to infants and young children and pregnant women, is both prudent and possible and should be prioritized. I also want to make sure for the record that a letter from our Department of Environmental Quality Director Dick Peterson is included with all of the records. You'll note there quite tellingly that our Environmental Protection Agency in Oregon has identified bisphenol A as a priority for reduction in the statewide toxics reduction strategy because of the toxicity, because of the exposure, and because of the potential health effects. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Why don't we have you go, and then we'll see if there's any questions. Yep.
Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Melissa Sanchez, and I am a board-certified family nurse practitioner. I currently practice at Willamette Family Medical Center here in Salem, and I am an active member of the Oregon Nurses Association. I'm here to tell you today why I support this bill as a nurse practitioner and as a mother of a young 7-month-old. I care for a population that is 60% covered by an Oregon health plan, and 30% of my patients have no insurance at all. Almost all of my patients with children utilize WIC services, and I believe that it is essential that WIC formulas and products that they supply contain no BPA. I care for children during the most vulnerable time in their lives when nutrition and health are paramount. During the first year of life, I will see new patients at least 7 times to monitor their growth and development. These appointments are used to guide parents and guardians with information on how to raise their children in a healthy and safe manner. The WIC program is one of the services that I encourage to help with nutrition and healthy lifestyle education. WIC services not only provide formula for families of my patients, but breast pumps and nutrition education. WIC is a program that aims to improve health outcomes for at-risk populations. They are also the leading buyer of formula in the USA. When this bill passes, hopefully, it will improve the health of the most at-risk population and help make safe products available to Oregon consumers, including my patients. As a provider, my goal is to provide the best care for my patients and their families, which means that I must be able to help them make the safest choices and educate them on the safest products to help with their growing families. From breast to bottle to sippy cup, any product that touches the mouth of a child that is stored in a product that has shown to be harmful to growth, development, and life of a child should be banned. My population that I care for has so many struggles already affecting their health. Banning BPA is one way to shrink the health disparity that is so ever-present in our communities. To practice preventative medicine is my goal, and preventative medicine is a model shift in the USA currently. Removing BPA from these products would help benefit our most vulnerable. As a family nurse practitioner, my job is to do no harm, first of all. I would celebrate the day that I can know that when I teach my patients about care for their children, it would not include products that could harm them. From a mother's standpoint, this is something I feel should be non-negotiable. Scientific research has shown that this product harms, so why would we inflict it upon our children and ourselves? I want to give my son the best chance he can to achieve whatever goals he wants, and beating cancer or autism or other disorders that I could prevent is not one of them. I believe this bill can also boost our economy, hopefully increasing jobs in our state and nation. As a consumer and parent and provider, I look to the FDA for guidelines about what is safe for my child and for my patients. And the most current opinion of the FDA is that reduction of BPA exposure needs to take place. Thank you for your opportunity.
Thank you very much for testifying. Any questions for any of these witnesses?
Okay.
question?
I have a question. Ms. Shibley, you say that BPA is a weak estrogen. Is that what you said?
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Olson, I did not say that. Is that written in my testimony?
Well, it's endocrine disrupting.
Endocrine disrupting,
yeah,
correct.
It invades the endocrine system. Is that a problem? Like soy milk, would that be a problem with any chemical that could affect a young child?
Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Olson, I don't know off the top of my head, and I wouldn't want to answer that off the top of my head. I'm happy to try to provide a response.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be helpful. Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You.
Thank you, Commissioner, for coming here today. And I wanted to offer for the moms, if you wanted to come up and testify, because I can imagine there's probably other places you'd rather be than having to sit here all afternoon. So if you want, did you want to come up? Okay. Yep. I was going to say I should call up Craig Smith again because last time he did such a good job at. Yeah, I know. He did. Craig, you want to come up? Be just like old times. We had him up and he held the baby.
Oh,
that's my. Okay, so why don't you go ahead and state your name for the record, and that way we can, if you wanted to leave, and that way you'd have a little more time than your poor children have been sitting here. This is how we feel by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, by the way. So,
my name is Susan Beal. I am here to testify in support of SB 695. I'm here with my baby son, Everett, and I'm the mother of 2 of the thousands of children under 3 in Oregon that this law would protect from toxins. Last year I came to testify with my big girl, Pearl, who's now 2.5, and I'm so appreciative of the chance to have a few minutes to speak as part of this process, and I want to thank the committee so much for the time. Speaking for myself as a mother and a consumer, I'm just amazed at how our understanding of toxins and chemicals has deepened just in my own lifetime. I was born in a hospital in 1974 where people could smoke anywhere that there wasn't an oxygen tent in the room. And when I gave birth to my own children here at Providence Portland Medical Center in 2008 and 2010, I can't tell you what a great feeling it is that the smoking area is restricted to the parking lot. It's hundreds of feet from where new babies and sick people and anyone who would be most vulnerable to the smoke can be protected. And knowing as we traveled, as our last 2 weeks as a family of 3, in case I went into labor early, every hospital in Oregon follows regulations like that to protect their patients. And then last fall when I was pregnant and wanted to make a playroom for my daughter in our house, I chose some paint for the walls and picked chalkboard paint so she'd have a chance to draw all over the place while we spent an Oregon winter home with the newborn. And the feeling of walking into a paint store or a hardware store and knowing that not one brand, not one type contains the lead that could poison her bloodstream or the baby that we hadn't even met yet is an incredible feeling of safety. There's no wrong choice there, and that feeling is not on the baby aisle at the grocery store or the drugstore. There are so many brands, so many choices. There are products that I never bought once in almost 3 years as a mother, and things that I've bought every week. And I'm asking you for your support in making all of them safe, because parents do have so many choices, but the voluntary and not often consistent labeling and the number of brands and products available make it a very confusing choice, even when you do take the solid time to do the research, wanting to make the best choices possible. I just want to thank you so much for addressing this issue, and I wanted to mention how much I appreciate Senator Dingfelder's work. I testified last year as well, and I wanted to thank Senator Dingfelder and Senator Atkinson and Governor Kitzhaber for the telephone town hall that they conducted this month with citizens. It was very inspiring. And I look to the day where we'll update our broken and outdated chemical regulation laws that were written in the era where you could smoke in a hospital. Thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, and thank you, Everett. You did a good job.
I'm Sandra Fudge. I everybody.
Can you pull the microphone just a little bit closer? Just one is fine.
I'm Sandra Fudge, and I've submitted my testimony to Beth yesterday. I'm here in support of this bill as well. A few years ago, I was more than double the size I am now. And from removing BPA and chemicals from my body, I became fertile. I now have three children. And I didn't know all of these things until I found out my kids were teething on lead-painted toys. Then I came upon bisphenol A and learned about that as well. And I've removed it from our homes and our environment as much as I can. I would like to beg you guys to please help me remove these chemicals from my kids' products, from everybody's. I don't think it's right that they are not labeled. I think that being an American citizen, I should be allowed the right to choose what I put in my children's bodies. It's only made me a better, healthier person with no more pain and no more death sentence from many, many physical health issues I had before. Thank you for your time, and I hope you enjoy my testimony when you get to read it.
Great, thank you. And what is your baby's name?
This is Dylan.
Dylan, we would just need it for the record. Any questions for Dylan or Everett or the moms? Or you look pretty happy. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Is this plastic?
This is wood, and this one is plastic.
Okay, is there enamel paint on that wood?
No, this is a non-toxic one made that is clearly labeled, but okay. There are others that I think are harder to distinguish.
Because okay. It goes in his mouth.
Yeah.
Good point. All right, thank you very much for coming here today, and thank you for your patience.
Thanks for the chance to talk.
Okay, now, Craig Smith, I'll have you come up. Actually, we'll just keep going down the list. Craig, Robert Rankin, and Bill Hoyle. For those new folks, Craig did a good job at babysitting last time he came up. Yeah. Why don't you go ahead?
Chair Dingfelder and committee members, thank you so much for having me here today. I am Craig Smith. I'm Vice President of the Northwest Food Processors Association and part-time committee babysitter.
That actually watch out, you might
get... was quite enjoyable. I'm glad you remembered that. That was actually kind of a highlight. I'm here today to speak to the bill as it was written. I hadn't had a chance to see the -5 amendments or any of the previous sets, so I'll cut this fairly short. I did give you written testimony to go through, but I want you to understand a little bit about the perspective that the food processing industry is taking on this bill and also the BPA issue in general. Can liners that are made with BPA have been used for decades, and they've been remarkably safe. In fact, we're not aware of any can failure problems that have occurred in the years that BPA has been used. And food safety is absolutely the utmost and top issue with our companies. And so the liner is absolutely an essential part of safe production of canned food, and the BPA is obviously a byproduct of the epoxy liner that's used to protect those cans. As far as alternatives are concerned, there are alternatives in the pipeline, but the research is very slow because the FDA approval process, as you're well aware, is very rigorous. We don't want to trade one issue for another. So there is nothing commercially available for all of our product lines at this point, and a lot of the alternative research is dependent upon what the product is that goes in the can. One of the things that is very problematic for us in this bill, as it was originally written, and I understand you're going to change the labeling provision, but the labeling piece is very much a challenge for food processors, because especially processors in the state of Oregon, Oregon is not a large enough market to justify the existence of a company that are the size that you need to be in the canned food business. Canned food is a very low margin, high volume business. And so every time we are facing individual state requirements for labeling, it causes huge problems for us. And in fact, a lot of companies would choose not to market products into the state with these kinds of provisions. There's also inconsistencies in FDA rules. In if you look at the California Prop 65 regulations, just created a nightmare for companies who sell products into California because of the labeling requirements. If you make a mistake, so for instance, if we were to make a mistake and send the wrong can into the state or put it into the chain of commerce here in the state of Oregon, and there was a BPA labeling requirement, and we sent the wrong can in, didn't put the label on, that's a violation of the law. In California, our companies are regularly being sued for these kinds of errors. It's really a problem. And so inadvertent contamination is another issue. Even in cans that are currently being sold as BPA-free, we are seeing problems with finding BPA in some of those products. And so there are just multiple problems that need to be worked out in a system like that, so we can't we cannot support this bill. We are opposed to the bill as it's written, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
Madam Chair,
did you want to ask a question?
Could you give us your position once you see the dash fives to see if that makes a difference?
I'd be glad to look at the dash fives and get back to you. Sure.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Dinkfelder and members of the committee. My name is Robert Rankin, and I am representing the International Formula Council today and appreciate the opportunity to testify. The IFC is an association of manufacturers and marketers of formulated nutrition products, including infant formulas and adult nutritionals.
And where are you based out of?
The association is based in Atlanta, Georgia. And I'm from Washington, D.C.
I was going to say, you picked one of our best days to come.
I know, it's my first day here.
This is a good day for Oregon, just so you know.
It's still a beautiful, beautiful state, though.
We like to tell people that. So,
We support the Senate's desire to protect Oregon infants and young children from potentially harmful chemicals. The primary focus of our organization is the health and well-being of infants and young children around the world because the product we manufacture, infant formula, remains the only safe, nutritious, and recommended alternative to human breast milk. It is for that reason that we oppose, respectfully, Senate Bill 695, which would prohibit infant formula and the distorting containers that are made or lined with BPA in the state of Oregon. We believe the scientific consensus doesn't support a prohibition on infant formulas, and because it doesn't really exist on BPA in general. I will mention a couple scientific issues related to BPA. In November 2010, the World Health Organization and the Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations convened an expert meeting to discuss the safety and health aspects of BPA, and over 30 experts from the U.S., Europe, Canada, other regions and countries concluded that the initiation of public health measures to address BPA would be premature, and this was based on the scientific environment as well as the alternatives environment for the packaging of materials that contain BPA. In addition, I would also like to reference the FDA announcement from January 2010, which Senator Boquist mentioned. I want to make a couple comments on that because FDA did uphold the safety of BPA in all current food contact applications, which would include infant formula. They did agree that there was some concern with potential effects on the brain, behavior, and prostate gland in fetuses, infants, and young children. However, if you look at the definition of some concern by the NTP, it actually means that more research is needed. There are potentially some concerns, but we need to do more research, and that's why FDA is working with NTP on additional studies currently. I also want to point out FDA's conclusion on their statement is FDA is not recommending that families change the use of infant formula or foods as the benefit of a stable source of good nutrition outweighs the potential risk from BPA exposure. And that's in line with other regulatory agencies, including the European Food Safety Authority, Health Canada, the German regulators, and others, that the levels of BPA that could potentially be in infant formulas do not pose a health risk. And so based on that information, we believe that the prohibition of formula in the bill is not justified by the science. I did want to take a moment to speak about the products that we're talking about because there are certain types of infant formulas that are made in packaging or that are in packaging that are not made using BPA. However, there are some, including metal infant formula cans, which the liquid is put into for certain applications that do use BPA. And as has been mentioned before, the Oregon WIC program provides infant formulas in those metal cans. They're contractually obligated to provide formulas in all formulations and package types, including metal cans, to the state of Oregon. And to date, there has been no FDA-approved alternative, commercially viable alternative, to the BPA-containing metal can liner for infant formulas. However, while the scientific evidence continues to support the safety of BPA, our industry is partnering with our packaging suppliers to minimize the potential levels of BPA that may be in the products. In addition, we're working with packaging suppliers and regulators to aggressively research alternatives to the packaging that may contain BPA. However, these steps take time. There need to be alternatives identified by the suppliers and then worked with regulators to identify and approve to FDA's determination. And then manufacturers need to use those alternatives in their own processes and determine if those packaging options meet or exceed the current uses, the current packaging uses that would be replaced. And so these processes take time, and as I mentioned before, there's not an FDA-approved commercial alternative to the metal can lining using BPA. I'll just skip to the end and just say, in summary, consistent with the scientific evidence and what I've said before, we believe a prohibition of infant formula containing BPA is not supported by science, and it could potentially impact the amount of formula that is available to citizens in the WIC population. I appreciate, again, the opportunity to comment and welcome any questions.
Why don't you go ahead, and then we'll take questions. Cool.
My name is Dr. William Hoyle. I'm here on behalf of the North American Metal Packaging Alliance, NAMPA. Pleased to be here to meet with you and go over some of the...
And hopefully you're not going to read your testimony.
No, I won't. As a matter of fact, given that there's copies there, and what I'd like to do is kind of, one, answer any of the questions as they come up. But I would like to, I think... go over a number of things. Start out with saying epoxy really is an enabling technology. It has enabled the industry to package a wide variety of foods and to move away from the problems that were associated with earlier packaging. If you go back a few years, you remember that dented cans and things like that, you were told don't ever use them because, yes, a dented can, what you do is you'd crack that inside liner. The food would then come in contact with the metal, and there was an opportunity then for microbiological contamination. And if you remember things, one of those microbiological contaminations is a thing called botulism, which is not exactly on the desired list. So having said that, epoxy technology for coating metal packaging enabled that packaging to be, even if it's dented, the coating on the inside is much more flexible, it's more resilient, it's more chemical resistant. It allows that package to survive through the packaging, the processing, and through the transportation all the way through to the consumer without the product interacting with that metal packaging, and therefore has created really the safest package there is out there. As a matter of fact, if you read, FDA will tell you, since the advent of use of epoxies for the last 32 years, there's not been one single health-related recall due to the metal packaging, not one in the last 32 years, and that epoxy has enabled that to happen out there. And if you worry about food safety, which we all do, according to a report from the Produce Safety Report, which actually came from the Pew Charitable Trust and Ohio State University and Georgetown, foodborne illnesses in the United States cost the American population $152 billion annually. $152 billion annually. And that has to do with a whole variety of things. I've given some of the numbers in there. But it comes down to, in the United States, 76 million people get sick every year due to foodborne illnesses. You hear about it. Eggs were recalled, spinach, peanut butter. Most recently, there were some other things that were out there that caused recalls due to a whole variety of different things. The difference is when it's packaged in the can, the epoxy technology has enabled not just this flexibility and all this other stuff, but it also allows the processors to thermally process that food at very high temperatures at very short periods of time, so you don't ruin the nutritional value of the food, yet you do eliminate that microbiological problem.
So since we're sort of short on time, I just want to make it clear that the Dash 5s does not ban, what I'm hearing is concern about banning cans.
I guess
Dash 5 does not, so I just want to make sure you read that. And
understand
so, that. So I just want to make sure that your testimony, because this bans baby bottles, sippy cups, and then making sure that infant formula does not contain BPA, and then there's a labeling requirement. So I just want to make sure that because of the, that's what the Dash 5s do, that your testimony is
liquid infant formula relies, with the exception of one package that I'm aware of, on epoxy coatings. And not only that, but there's some of them, especially first foods and things like that. It's the only thing we have found. Matter of fact, there's one, because those foods are so aggressive, those formulas have a lot of nutritional additives in them, micronutrients that have to survive in order for that child to get a full broad spectrum. If you have any interaction between that product and the can, if you don't have that lining there, those micronutrients are destroyed. And there's some of them that are so aggressive that it actually requires a stainless steel closure. And there's nothing that can adhere to that stainless steel other than an epoxy coating.
I just want to make sure you know that the bill does not ban that.
I'm well aware of that.
The other question I had is 9 other states have passed, either through legislation or administrative rule, a similar bill or actions.
I understand that.
Curious if you're meeting those requirements in the other states.
Well, one of them is Connecticut, and I will tell you that as we speak, the people in Connecticut are trying to figure out how to change that rule that or law that they passed 2 years ago because it, they have found out it doesn't work. And they're actually meeting tomorrow looking for amendments to see how to make it work. So, yes, I've unfortunately been to almost all the states.
I actually received a letter from the chair who said that her intent is not to change that legislation, just so you know. So
I'm aware of both sides, but there's other people who are on the other side saying we got to change it to make it work, including the public health service people who are there. But to get, let me go on to other things. I think the things that people talk about that you hear, there's a lot of things that are out there. One of them we heard earlier was that there are alternatives and that essentially BPA was developed in 1936 as a synthetic hormone. Nothing could be farther from the truth. In 1930, actually BPA was developed in the late 1800s. It was tested in the UK to see if it had estrogenic activity in 1936, to see if it could be, like other things were. The interesting thing was is it was dismissed from that study because it was too weakly estrogenic. It wouldn't work for what they were trying. So you hear a lot of things on both sides of it. The other part of it, I heard you ask about soy products and things like that. If you read, there was an article by Enten that was out just the other day in the National Review. He talked about exactly that thing, and he talked about the estrogenicity of other things, including antioxidants that are in almost every food. So they are significantly higher estrogenic levels than BPA. Matter of fact, soy is probably several thousand times more estrogenic.
I'm just going to ask you, I'm looking at the clock. Yep. I think there's a couple of questions. I still have about 8 people who'd like to testify, and we are wrapping up by 5. So if
Let
you
me
could
get
just
one
summarize,
other thing
that would be great.
I will do as best I can.
You've got about 2 minutes.
Okay. The part of it, too, is I think that's important is that that we heard one person testify that she read all the studies. So have large panels of people working for FDA, the European Food Safety Authority, the Japanese, the Germans, the UK, New Zealand, Australia, and Canada, FDA, EPA, NIOSH, and others. They've all read those same studies, about 1,700 of them. And after looking at all those studies, they've come to the conclusion that bisphenol A, in its current concentrations, in its intended use, is not a problem at its current levels of migration. Matter of fact, if you look at the European Food Safety Authority, they've recommended even based on the precautionary principle, not a risk-based society as we are, that 0.6 parts per million is an acceptable level. And that's having an acceptable level based on the studies reduced by a precautionary principal multiplicand. So with that, really, the other thing is you'll hear about alternatives. Alternatives have been tough to come by. There are some packers out there like Eden Foods in Michigan that have are marketing out there. There's a lot of things that are labeled out there as BPA-free. If you actually analyze them, and I'm an analytical chemist by trade, they are not BPA-free. You can find it. So it's marketing and what's real, you've got to be careful. Just because it says BPA-free doesn't mean it is. The other part, Eden Foods. Eden Foods, what they did is they took a material that was used prior to epoxies. They went back to the old oleoresinous technology, the part that I talked about that it cracked and did all these other things. And they use it for only about 20% of their product line. The rest of their product line is not capable of being packed in that oleoresinous food. So with that, the bottom line is that NAMPA believes that the studies that are out there based on all of the toxicological studies and all of the things, believes that the conclusions that have come from all the world regulatory authorities that it is safe, and will follow that direction. Are they working on alternatives? Absolutely, because to be honest with you, bisphenol A, even though it meets all the safety requirements, all those other things, it hasn't passed now what is called consumer confidence. And if it lacks consumer confidence, we can't sell it. It's not, so we are working as hard and as fast as we can. We want to get rid of it faster than you do. But the problem is that the length of time it takes to develop it from a resin to a coating so that we can actually apply it in the machinery, get it through the testing, make sure that it works, and remember that these packages are out there for a long period of time. Go to and
okay. You've got, I'm going to have to.
I'll stop.
We have some questions.
I'll leave
so
the
if
questions.
You, that
Go ahead.
We can cut into the question time, which I'd prefer not to. So I know Senator Prezonsky has a question. I'm assuming.
Yeah, I actually have about three or four, Madam Chair. I have three or four questions,
okay,
if I could, to the panel. Craig, I want to thank you for being willing to look at the Dash 5s and give us your positions. And let's see, Mr. Rankin, Mr. Hoyle, I asked you the same thing. I've looked at your testimony. It looks to me what I would call somewhat canned testimony that's been used maybe in other states and other times. So what I see here is your positions seem to be really focused on metal cans. This bill, based on what we heard on the Dash 5s, does not include metal cans, with the exception of where you're talking about baby formula. And I guess for Mr. Rankin, I think this would be for you or maybe Mr. Hoyle. It says here about baby formula that would be required under the Dash 5s that they not have no more than 0.1 BBP detectable BPA.
Part per billion, 0.1 part
right.
per
billion. Is that possible?
If you, to my knowledge, there's not a testing methodology that can reliably test to that level. It's my understanding that the methodology that was approved by regulatory bodies can only reliably test to a level higher than that. But it does. So, and the fact remains that the WIC products include liquid formula metal cans, and so I believe that would affect what I was saying.
I understand that, Mr. Rankin, but what I also understand is that this has a limit, and it sounds like there's other states that already have enacted similar legislation. And
that,
so the question is your company or industry able to provide liquid formula in metal cans that meet that requirement?
No, no other state has set a limit, and it remains to be seen whether any manufacturer can meet the law that is set to come in. Later this year.
All right, thank you.
So, can I answer the question? The only way you can analyze to that level is with what they call an LC-MS-MS, a liquid chromatograph slash mass spec slash mass spec. It's a double mass spec, and that piece of equipment, depending upon what the bells and whistles on it, runs anywhere from about $650,000 to $1 million per piece of equipment. To my knowledge, there are three of those in the United States that are being used for food analysis. The analysis is very extremely difficult. Even a clean lab to do it at that level is just, it is intense.
All right.
And I'm going to, we're going to follow up because I do have other information saying that other states actually have that. I have some information that Maryland's been working on.
If I can follow up.
We will.
All right. So let me ask this. Know that knowing that the Dash 5s apparently are going to impact the sale of baby bottles, sippy cups, and usable bottles for your industries, they're not impacted by that, are they? I asked for those three things.
In terms of those three things, that does not affect the products, but if it mentions WIC and infant formula, it does.
I understand that. But those three areas, you're off the table. Your industry has no concern about that. Is that correct?
Well, the only concern we have is that anything that says that BPA is unsafe, people look at it and say it's unsafe here. Why isn't it unsafe there? So it does spread across.
So you're saying that your industry is still going to be opposed to it, even if it didn't have metal cans?
We're opposed to it on the science. The science doesn't support the decision,
right.
And because it could have detrimental effects, you start with one and then it works towards the other. That's why we'll start.
Mr. Hoyle, you were here last year, correct?
Yes, sir.
What's happened in your industry? What have your industry done in the last year to try to correct this problem besides what you've told us that it takes a long time for anything to happen?
We've been working on it. We are working. There are trials. I'm sure if you went to Senator Boquist, you'd find out down at Truett Brothers, which is right here in Salem, that there are cans in there that do not contain epoxies on the inside.
All right, let me ask you this, Mr. Hoyle. You've been, like you said, you're here last year. Can you tell us how many states you've been before giving testimony in legislative forums or in front of Congress?
Almost all of them, including Congress, yes.
Okay, within the last year?
Well, not all of them in the last year, but over the last few years. I've been to almost every state.
Okay, Mr. Rankin, have you also been on the circuit giving testimony in various states?
This is the second state I've been to in the past year.
Great, thank you. Welcome to Oregon.
Thank you.
Sunny Oregon. Okay. No, you let Craig off pretty easy, but...
He's close.
We'll have you back. You know. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate
you
coming here today and sharing your testimony. Okay, I'm going to keep calling folks up, so hopefully we can get everybody up here. And we're fortunate to have members of the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs. So Mr. Louis Pitt and Ms. Carolyn Cruz, I'd like to come up. Michael, do you want to introduce them?
Certainly.
Thank you for your patience.
Well, thank you, Chair Dingfelder and members of the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Michael Mason, lobbyist for the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs. Very pleased to have Louis Pitt, Jr. here, the Government Affairs and Planning Director, and for the first time, I think, Carolyn Cruz, who is the Director of Human Services and Health at the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs to talk about their concerns about bisphenol A and support for Senate Bill 695.
Thank you.
Okay, good afternoon. Louis Pitt, Jr., Director of Government Affairs and Planning for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. We have a tribal member, Heather Martinez, over here, too, that's been working with Carol in a number of things. I guess the theme here, once again, is as neighbors, is that we have to do what has to be done here to, I think, protect the way of life that we've lived and enjoyed for thousands of years. And I, as Government Affairs and Planning, we take a look at, I think, all of what our neighbors are doing and as far as our rights off reservation. And we have to partner and work with you folks to do what's right for, again, our children and our future also. One of the, I think, understandings as tribal people is that people need to get, for thousands of years, we've depended on clean water, chush is what we call it in the Warm Springs language, and every feast that we have starts with chush and ends with chush, and we celebrate salmon, deer, roots, and berries, and all of those are very natural materials from the world and around us. And to depends very much on what our neighbors are introducing into those ecosystems, too. And when it comes to water on reservation, we do the best, I think, of any government in the state of Oregon in protecting water. We also assist our neighbors upstream in the Matolius River and the Deschutes River, too, to encourage them to also protect the water. Bisphenol A, very scary. My youngest is now 22, and my oldest is like 42, I think it is, and I remember those times of just dedicating my whole life, my whole being, to trying to be a parent, and what it all means, and all of the, as stated earlier, the soup of chemicals that we live in and introduce for whatever reasons, and some natural, some unnatural, and so I depend a lot on the Creator to help us through that maze. Bisphenol A, we can do something about that. It sounds like risk analysis, risk benefits. Is that is it worth the risk? Well, I, as one of your neighbors, as represent 4,923 tribal members, I say no. We need to do what we can to protect our children. And on reservation, I think we always do what's best for our folks too. And we will. Probably work with our sanitarian, work with Carolyn here to figure out exactly how can we not only have an education program, but also a program that probably exceeds what you're going to be doing here in the protection of our people. Obesity and diabetes is always a, I think we've got an epidemic throughout Indian country with this new diet that we have that, away from, again, that salmon, those roots and berries and deer meat and those foods that people that was had to be more mobile and had to be burning more calories to just live and survive and thrive. We didn't just survive on the land over thousands of years. We thrived. And so diabetes is one of the largest killers of our peoples that we have on reservation, accidents and heart problems, again, similar to you folks. Can we do something about it? You bet we can. The younger women, it was Carolyn that brought it up with some of our young teenagers, is that maturing at a different time in a different way than they have in the past and looking at it. And so that was really what got us focused on trying to figure out what's good out here. And again, once again, this committee, ahead of the curve, thank you again, as neighbors, as I sure appreciate that. And I think in speaking for the tribal membership, and I'm a head of vital stats department, and the brand new babies that come in to become tribal members, precious little ones they are, is that, you know, it just makes it very real. And so, like when I was a young parent, too, is that, and it's such an ominous responsibility, and I think we all have to do what we can to help those young parents, because Lord help them, they're going to learn the hard way along the way, and if we can help them as governments, I think we should do so. And this is one of the times I think that government does have a role here that I support very much. So please support Senate Bill and move on with Senate Bill 695. Carolyn is, again, she's fully recovered from her time working with the state and now works with us on the reservation.
We're glad to hear that. Carolyn, would you like to add anything?
Yes. My name is Caroline Cruz. I am the Health and Human Services General Manager for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. And so I see what's been happening over the years. I worked for my tribe 20 years ago. I worked for the state, and over the years, I have seen the difference that chemical that's being introduced into our environment has caused and the consequences that it has created. We are told as Indian people that we are keepers of the earth. We cannot be good keepers when we're competing against chemicals. Native American people tend to have higher health issues. We're always on the top of the chart for obesity, for cancer, especially cancer has increased dramatically. My mother had cancer, and we know this was introduced on environmental issues, because this is not something that was seen, you know, as recently as 30, 40 years ago. I did take this internally and talk with our sanitarian person, and one of the concerns that she had is that even if we ourselves, because I do know that I was raised on a bottle, you know, our milk was put in a bottle. It was not put in plastic. And so her concern is that even if we don't ever touch a baby bottle, even if we don't even touch a sippy cup or a pacifier, or even if we don't use a baby formula in that's in the can, that this does end up in our landfill. It does end up in our dumps. It does have to break down, and the BPA is a chemical, and it gets absorbed into our soil, into our water, then impacts our animals, our fowl, our fish. And this is getting into our system. Again, we cannot be good keepers because we cannot compete. Now, I listened to all the testimony here, and I understand maybe some of the science that's out there maybe does not support this, but I know my eyes do not lie, and I do know what's happening in our Indian reservation as well as our other tribes, because I talk nationally with our other tribes, and I do know that we are being impacted by things that are being introduced into our environment. So I am honored to be here to be a voice of not only Confederate tribes of Warm Springs, but all Indian people and all our neighbors, and I stress that I do hope that we do look at this bill seriously and that we do support it. Thank you.
Thank you for being here today. Mm-hmm. Any questions for our tribal members? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So next I'm going to call up Anna Stiefvater. Anna? Mark Russello and Francesca Yvonne. And I'm going to pass this off just for a few minutes to my vice chair, who promises to be nice to you.
That's right. We're done.
We warned her.
She wanted to get out early, so we'll just go ahead and do that. Who would like to go first, please?
All right. So, Vice Chair Olson and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 695. My name is Anna Stiefvater. I care about this bill because I'm a public health nurse, a member of the Health Policy Cabinet for the Oregon Nurses Association, and a mom. I'm here today to testify on behalf of the Oregon Public Health Association. The Oregon Public Health Association is a statewide organization that advocates for public policies to improve the health of all Oregonians. OPHA supports banning bisphenol A from drink containers because it will protect children and prevent disease. My first daughter was about one when I began hearing about bisphenol A. I learned that the chemical is a synthetic estrogen and it's found in many hard plastics. I learned that the research studies were raising concerns about potential health effects of the chemicals. And I also knew, as a nurse who works with pregnant women and young children, that a developing child's brain is particularly vulnerable to any chemical. I worried about what I had inadvertently exposed my daughter to. I started the search for BPA-free sippy cups. The scientific research around BPA has continued to grow, and BPA has now been linked to a variety of serious health conditions, which we've heard a lot about today already. In the absence of a ban on BPA, the public health and medical communities have responded to the research with warnings and guidelines for parents. In 2009, the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, where I used to work, issued a warning to pregnant women and breastfeeding, to pregnant and breastfeeding women and children under the age of two to avoid the chemical. The American Academy of Pediatrics has issued guidelines for parents who want to reduce their children's exposure to the chemical. Recommendations to avoid BPA coming from these respected organizations don't come lightly. These recommendations and others validate that there are significant concerns about the impacts of BPA exposure, particularly for our children. I work with pregnant women and young children, many of whom are low income. The families I see are more likely to be in poor health, more likely to have children at risk for poor developmental outcomes, and less likely to know about the warnings around BPA or follow guidelines for the safe use of plastics. They don't have the time to track down the latest information on safe products. They're using borrowed bottles and sippy cups because that's what they can afford. This BPA ban is important because it will protect Oregon's children regardless of income. It will ensure parents don't have to worry every time their young children eat. I urge you to support Senate Bill 695. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Rosenwald?
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Rosolo. I'm with the Green Guard Environmental Institute. We are the largest certifier of low-emitting products in the world. We have international offices. We're based in Georgia. We have offices in China, in Germany, and then in Oregon, which is where I'm located and is why we're here today. I won't take up much time. I just want to kind of highlight the importance of this bill. We obviously are supportive of this, and I might add we are members of the Oregon Business Association, who's also supportive of this measure as well. The reason why we feel that it's so important that Oregon takes a step forward for this is, number one, a lot of the policies that our state's passed is looked at nationally as a good benchmark, and there hasn't been a lot of traction on BPA in this country so far, and so what we're seeing are a lot of competing definitions pop up. And as an organization such as ours that tries to launch labels and certification programs of BPA-free, that can be very difficult. In Kentucky, for example, I believe there's a bill right now that establishes BPA-free as being 1 ppm or part per million, whereas this one is obviously 0.1 ppb. That's a very, very big difference. And so the problem that we have and the concern that is out there is you're going to have a significant number of manufacturers who possibly through no fault of their own may feel like they're in compliance with the Oregon law because they comply with, say, the Kentucky law, which obviously is different. And we have seen research that suggests that you need to be looking at the parts per trillion level for some of these health implications of BPA, and I'm not here advocating for that. I'm just saying there are significant ramifications to having these varying levels and varying degrees of chemicals that you allow within this product. And so we are supportive of the 0.1 ppb, and I would also say that looking at the Dash 5 amendments, we're also very supportive of setting up of the commission or the body or what have you to look at this. One of the main concerns that we have is what substitutes you're going to put in. And it's not always necessarily a known substitute. We know that it's pretty easy to change around a few molecules here and there, and so while then you may not technically have BPA anymore, you still could have a very harmful chemical that's contained in that product. We've heard rumors that fluoride is being used. That's unsubstantiated and certainly not meant to insinuate, but if that were the case, then you wouldn't have BPA anymore, but you'd have something that was a lot worse and would be absorbed into the body a lot quicker than BPA. So there are ramifications to that as well. So I'll stop there in the interest of time, but we are very supportive. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair Dingfelder and members of the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, I thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Francesca Yvonne, and I am Northern Valley Regional Director for AFSCME Local 132's Child Care Providers Together Union. I'm also Council 75's Independent Providers Vice President and a co-founder and co-creative director of my own small business, Little Land Daycare. On behalf of the union professionals and parents I represent, I bring a message of support for SB 695, and urge you to eliminate this poison from our children's diets and lifestyles. Profits before our most vulnerable and precious people is a non-argument as far as we are concerned. This issue is significant enough for me personally to leave work with my daycare children to come here and advocate for the health and futures of all Oregonian children who will be responsible for taking care of all of us in our old age, I might point out. And because of that, they deserve all of the advantages that we can provide. We urge you to join the many voices of reason already ahead of us in requiring a straight ban on BPA in bottles, sippy cups, and formula containers. This will help support me, my sisters and brothers in child care, and the families we serve to make the best choices possible when purchasing products that preserve and nourish our children's health, growth, and future. I thank you again for the opportunity to testify today and welcome any questions that you have that I could answer. Thank you.
Any questions for the panel?
No, thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you very much for testifying, and thank you for waiting. We know it's been a long hearing, but we appreciate your input. Lisa Frank, is that right? Frack. Andrea, and I'm sorry, Andrea, I can't read your last name.
Peluso.
And I'll also call up, Rosalind Green. Do we have Dave come yet? No, okay.
2 months left after that. Okay, great. Thank you. Just a reminder to say your name for the record, please.
Okay, sure. My name is Lisa Frack, and I represent the Environmental Working Group. Chair Dingfelder and distinguished committee members, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify in strong support of SB 695. I may look like I'm reading my testimony, but my testimony also is voluminous, so this is not my written testimony. These are just my notes. I represent the Environmental Working Group, which is a nonprofit research and advocacy organization based in Washington, D.C., which is my employer. I work from home in Oregon for them, so I've lived in the state for 10 years. I have two children under eight. Both of them, unlike myself, are native Oregonians. So this issue is of both professional and significant personal interest to me. I'm here today because I want nothing more than what most people want, the right to raise my children in an environment that does not adversely affect their health. Thank you, specifically, Chair Dingfelder, for keeping this on the front burner. I was paying attention last time this came through, and I'm one grateful Oregon mother among many. There's a lot to say about this chemical to support a ban, which I included in that voluminous written testimony, but in the time I have today, I wanted to highlight four. Some of them have been covered a bit, so I'll cut that down. The first is that the science is strong and mounting, and you heard that from a number of people referencing the over 200 studies that are showing that this is a concern. The second is that we can't afford to wait for the federal government. The third is that industry is leading the way at this point. Someone mentioned Walmart earlier, but government regulation is the right answer here. And four, as Commissioner Saltzman noted, non-toxic living is a right for all Oregonians. I'm going to skip over the science section since that has been extensively covered. The second point was we can't afford to wait for the federal government. States must and are taking action on BPA because the federal chemical regulatory process is broken and there's no near-term hope for an overhaul. Already close to 10 states have taken action to strictly regulate BPA in food, beverage containers, and some other child care articles. Specifically about the federal government, for 10 years, they have funded studies, conducted analyses, published papers, convened conferences, issued press releases about the myriad hazards of bisphenol A. And contrary to what the gentleman from our nation's capital said, we don't need to wait for more research. We have lots. They've spent millions of dollars and thousands of man hours documenting these hazards in that research, but one thing that they have still not done is take any immediate action to protect public health. Inaction in Oregon, while we wait for the FDA, would be irresponsible given what we now know about this chemical, its potential to harm children's health, and the current prospects for this type of action in Congress. The third point was that industry is taking the lead, but this task requires government regulation. As we heard earlier, some notable manufacturers are eliminating BPA. But it's government, in this case state government, that must respond to the resounding chorus of concern that BPA is a real threat to public health. It's naive to think that the problem of very under-regulated toxic chemicals can be entirely solved by the private sector. While some are proactively moving past this chemical, and we applaud them for it, it's not been easy to lead the way, specifically Eden Foods. I mean, they really pioneered getting it out when it really wasn't even politic. They just thought it was the right thing. Our public health protection shouldn't be left to select industry leaders. Instead, we think there should be a uniform health protective standard to avoid consumer confusion. As you likely know, there's plenty of that, and opportunities for greenwashing on product labels, of which there's also plenty. Oregonians shouldn't have to examine product labels with a microscope to assess their safety. I brought some cans with me, but I left them at my chair. But essentially, they look identical. One has BPA, and one doesn't. Oregonians should have confidence that the products on their store shelves where they live are safe because they are consistently regulated with their public health as the priority. I just keep it simple now. It's sort of a personal Oregon consumer story. I just don't buy canned food anymore because I don't know what's in it. And honestly, the fresh and the frozen is better for me anyway. I doubt everyone's doing that yet, but I think it's moving that direction when more and more people. So as far as the can industry goes, until I can trust what's in there, I'm just skipping it. And lastly, non-toxic is for all Oregonians. While there are BPA alternatives on the market, you know, you can get born free, you can get glass bottles now, unlike when my son was born when there were not those alternatives. A lot's changed in 8 years. We need to ensure that Oregon parents of all incomes, all languages, and all parts of our state, whether there's a Whole Foods there or a dollar store, can use formula or baby food that doesn't jeopardize the health of their children. Every parent deserves at least that. And I'd like to conclude by referring back briefly to the FDA. I think opponents of a health protective ban like this one often rely on its inaction to defend their position that BPA is safe to feed children. When the FDA and the National Toxicology Program, the NTP, raised some concern about BPA in 2010, what they were flagging is concern specifically that BPA exposure during childhood could impact the developing brain, behavior, prostate gland of fetuses and infant children. Some concern is the midpoint of FDA's five levels of concern, and interestingly to EWG, that's the same level of concern that the NTP determined was appropriate for fetal exposures to amphetamines. On that note, I thank you again for the opportunity to testify in very strong support of SB 695. I sincerely appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Whoever wants to go next.
Yep. Chair Dingfelder and members of the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, thank you for this opportunity today. My name is Rosalind Green, and I'm speaking on behalf of, and I'm chair of AFSCME Council 75's Green Caucus, AFSCME Green, and I'm also a member of Local 350 Clackamas County, where I work in the Office of Sustainability. And the caucus is made up of members from all different agencies, including DEQ, Metro, local governments, and correctional officers. And our mission is to bring the voices of working people into the sustainability movement. AFSCME Green, along with our brothers and sisters at Local 132, which you've heard from, and our sisters at AFSCME Women's Committee, we support Senate Bill 695 and see this both as a workplace health and safety issue as well as a moral obligation to protect our to protect children and families. In a BPA work-related study published in 2009 by the Oxford University Press, important evidence showed that exposure to BPA in the workplace significantly increased the risk to male sexual health. And the point, two points here that I really want to emphasize is that the health of impacts of BPA on workers is a reality, and if studies show that it can impact the health of a full-grown male, that you better believe it can impact children and infants. Secondly, and this is the main point I'm here to make, is that AFSCME workers care about this issue, and that our members are actively working to eliminate BPA from the workplace, not only for the safety of workers, but also for the public that we serve. One example is an active AFSCME Green member, Grant Swanson, who's vice president of Local 88 Multnomah County, who works at Multnomah County Library, was very active in getting Multnomah Library to switch to BPA-free receipt paper. And because studies showed that BPA was found on 40% of receipts sampled in the study, and that basically it's proved that the free-form powdery BPA from receipts absorbs through the skin easily and has an impact on health. So these findings have basically influenced institutions like Multnomah County Library to switch to more healthy, less toxic products. So now they are exclusively using receipt paper that does not have BPA in it. And so this switch is important not only for the workers that that work with receipts daily, but also to the families that come to the county library. So AFSCME and its members care about workplace safety and the health of our workers, but above all else, we care about our families and the public that we serve. So thank you for this opportunity to voice our support for Senate Bill 695. Thanks.
Thank you.
Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee, my name is Andrea Peluso. I'm the Executive Director for Family Forward Oregon and the Mother Pack. I am also a mother of two children under 6 years of age, which is what actually brings me here before you today. My children were almost certainly born with bisphenol A BPA in their bodies. After all, we've heard earlier today, almost 95% of Americans have BPA accumulating in their bodies, and I'm guessing that my pregnant body was no exception. Their bodies were likely further contaminated by drinking from tainted polycarbonate baby cot bottles and sippy cups and by eating canned food. This means to me that they were contaminated by things that I fed them before I knew that I needed to be concerned about the safety of my children's food containers. Our toxic laws failed my children. They failed me as a parent whose top priority is protecting their health and safety. Mounting evidence shows the harmful effects of exposure to endocrine-disrupting BPA, a substance that we heard was originally proposed as an estrogen replacement therapy due to its estrogenic effects, and was subsequently added to plastics without any testing for its ill effects. I have no other way to describe what happened when I learned about BPA and its effects on children's health, except to say that I became very angry as a mother, as an Oregonian, that I had unwittingly exposed my children to this substance. I was angry that my government had not protected me or them. I think we all know that early motherhood is filled with lots of sleepless nights, but I'd like to say that as a mother in the current environment, it's filled with sleeplessness for all sorts of new reasons, including that we are constantly witnessing reports about products intended for use by children being unsafe for children to use. We are no longer sure where to turn for trusted information about product safety. We are increasingly frustrated that no one is protecting our children's health against what seems to be a profit-making at all cost motive of corporations who produce goods intended for children. It seems from earlier testimony we heard today that many of the manufacturers are more concerned about products being safe for transport than they are for actual consumption by us. And that, again, angers me and makes me want to take action. There are people who will tell you that the market will solve this problem. Parents will learn about the harmful effects of BPA, as I have done, and will stop buying things made with it. I'd like to tell those people that I have spent during my 6 years as a parent so far more hours than I care to count researching every single product that comes into my home, hours I could have spent working, or, more importantly, being with my children. And to what end? At some point, my children have to leave my house. They go to school, they go to friends' houses, they go to restaurants and countless other places where they're exposed to this chemical, whether or not it's something I buy. And as you might imagine, identifying what does and does not contain BPA is no easy feat. I struggle with it despite having 2 master's degrees, many options for places to shop in the urban area where I live, and ready access to online resources. You can bet there are children across the state whose parents are unwittingly exposing them to BPA right now, because they do not know about its harmful effects, or because they find it impossible to understand information that is written for toxicologists or, as we heard, chemical analysts, and not for the rest of us. And apparently, on top of that, we've heard today that there are products labeled as BPA-free that are actually not BPA-free, which, for me, increases the need for a ban.
Can I ask you to wrap up? We have 2 more people and 9 minutes.
Yep, no problem. I mostly just want to encourage the state to take action. It's clear from the 9 other states taking action across the country that this is a state-level concern and that it's time for Oregon to be among the leaders in the country who are really taking efforts to protect our children's health. Thank you.
Great. Thank you all for testifying here today. Any questions for these witnesses? Okay. Thank you very much. And we have 2 people left, Dana Hepper and Dave Rosenfeld. Anybody else that would like to come testify that didn't sign up? Okay, come on up. Is Dana here? Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the time. I'm Dave Rosenfeld, Osprey's Executive Director. Osprey is a statewide consumer group. Osprey supports SB 697 for all the reasons that have already been well laid out. BPA presents a significant public health threat to our children. For that reason alone, we ought to be getting that out of kids' products. The market itself is moving in the right direction, not moving fast enough. This is a way to level the playing field so that the good actors are rewarded and that our parents have the tools they need in order to make sure that their kids are safe. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Dana.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Dana Hepper. I'm the advocacy director with Stand for Children. And I am also a mom of a 7-month-old baby girl, and so these issues are important to me on a number of fronts. I've submitted written testimony, so I'll be brief. You've already heard that there is a broad and growing consensus in the scientific community that BPA has negative impacts on our health, and in particular on the health of children. There are over 200 studies that confirm this. BPA is the highest levels of BPA are entered into our bodies when they're entered in via food and drink. And so that's why I think we focused in this bill on those important pieces. And the other piece that I think is just important to reinforce is that kids suffer most from consuming BPA through food and drink. And so when I think about
my baby and shopping for the products that go into her mouth, and especially the products that she's digests in her body. I, of course, look to avoid BPA, but also I understand as a busy mom who is budget conscious, that's not always the easiest thing to do. And I think there is a we know that BPA products with BPA are still readily available in some discount stores. It may be easier to find BPA-free products in urban areas as opposed to rural areas. And so I think as we move forward with this bill, I urge you to move forward with it in the name of public health justice and equality, so that we can make sure that all people, regardless of where they shop or where they live, have equal access to BPA-free products for our children. So I think that sums it up.
Thank you. Any questions for either of these panelists? Yeah.
Just correction. David, you said 697. I assume you mean 695.
I did. My apologies.
Thank you for catching that.
Well, 697 deals with reforming the definition on Measure 73, and I didn't think you wanted to.
Madam Chair, Senator, I appreciate the clarification.
It was just a test right to make sure that my committee members were still paying attention. So. Thank you very much. With that, colleagues, it ends the public hearing on Senate Bill 695. I will close that, and we are adjourned for the day, and we'll be back here on Thursday with tax breaks, and you all have homework assignments, although I know Senator Brzezinski is excused, but we know you'll be reading those over the weekend,
correct? I have them with me right now.